Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, dear. How are you? This is Jeffrey Swartz. This is the Constitution Today. I am a professor of law at WMU Cooley Law School's Tampa Bay campus. With me is my compatriot, who just happens to be, by sheer coincidence, and I believe in coincidences, okay, but they're hard, coincidence is hard to create. You have to work hard at creating a coincidence, okay? But by sheer coincidence, Brendan Berry is with us, who is also a professor of law at Cooley Law School's Tampa Bay campus. First I'm going to say good morning to Brendan. How are you today, Brendan?
Good. And before you do your usual disclaimer, I have to have a little chat with Hezzy, so you can just sit there and listen for a minute, okay?
Oh, gee, okay. Sure. I'll put myself on mute.
Okay.
Good morning.
So Hezzy, how you doing, man? I think you and I have to come to terms with that we're really not worthy of being in the presence of the other individual who's on the line, because we're done here, he's going to be on TV in Miami. And then tomorrow morning, he's going to be have a national audience on C-SPAN. So I'm starting to feel a little bit intimidated by the star power of Jeff Swartz, and I just don't know if.
But
I
want to tune in. I want to tune in no matter what. I'm going to have to handle that depression.
Right. Okay, Jeff, you can come back now. We were just talking about you.
Yeah. Really, you were? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for that. That nice plug. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
The opinions that are espoused by Brendan Berry in particular about me and other opinions that we give on this particular show are not necessarily the opinions of the administration of Cooley Law School and or faculty individually or at large. How's that? Okay. I want that disclaimer for them on that too. Okay. Good morning, everybody.
Yeah.
We have to have probably the only laugh that we're going to be able to have today. I told Brendan I was going to tell a story this morning, but I would usually I let him know what the story's about. I didn't tell him this one. Okay. Oh, by the way, good morning, Marilyn, since we're about to talk about you. On the other night, Marilyn and I were sitting looking over on the beach from a friend's home that's right on Posset Grove, right on the beach. And we're talking, and somehow or another, she starts to ask me whether I saw the video she sent me that involved an incident that took place in Las Vegas, Nevada, where some people did some video and said that something was crashing out of the sky and had crashed in one of the areas of Las Vegas, and that these people had run over and seen a spacecraft that had crashed, and that there were these 10-foot-tall green men that were walking around the area in Las Vegas. Not little green men, big green men. Okay, so it made a change in the usual thing we hear. And the police got called, and the police show up, and she's talking to me about the body cam of the police officers who talk to these people, and they describe what these big green men look like. And you can hear them saying, you go out and check. No, I don't want to go. You go. Okay, because they're scared to go outside and look for these big green men. And they're all saying, no, you go. No, you go. I'm not going to go. Like the Keystone Cops, a little bit of really slapstick humor. Right? And she says, you know, there's a committee in Congress that is investigating all of this, and I think that this should be part of their investigation. She says, and I don't understand all the millions of dollars that are being spent on investigations of whether Joe Biden has ever been ever committed a felony. And then she closes with the best line. She says, I think the money that's being spent on these two committees, it is more likely that the committee investigating the little green, the big green men will come up with a positive answer than the committee that's investigating Joe Biden to try to establish he committed a felony. Okay.
Oh, God.
I thought that was such a fabulous line. I had to tell this story. Honey, you were hysterical.
That's good.
I mean, that really tells you everything we need to know about our United States government and the Congress of the United States, okay, the House of Representatives. I thought it was fabulous.
That is. And it's also true.
Okay, normally go ahead. What were you going to say? Go ahead, say.
It's also true. We're much more likely to find big green men than a felony by Joe Biden. Right.
Yeah, really. I don't get it. Normally, we go into what do you really think at this point. Those of you who listen know that that's the next thing we talk about. We each take about 5 minutes, maybe a little bit more, to talk about what we really think. The problem is that what we really think all revolves around what we are going to talk about today, and probably ad nauseum, but what we're going to talk about today, and that is the ongoing now criminal prosecution, not investigation, prosecution of Donald J. Trump. And I am going to act like a judge would act in the context of what I'm going to call him. His name is Mr. Trump. I'll give him an honorarium of former president, or calling him president, as ex-presidents are called. I will not give him that honorarium. And so I've got a whole bunch of things that need to be examined that have been talked about, and I think answers were either incomplete or inaccurate. And the first thing that I want to talk about is whether there is something unique about this indictment in the context that it is a former president of the United States who is going to stand trial. And the question is, how unique really is this? Other than the fact that he is the first former president, to be charged with felonies against the United States. And if he is indicted out of Washington, the first president or former president to be charged with insurrection against the government of the United States, just the office is really the only uniqueness here. And I'm going to give you some history here. Aaron Burr was vice president of the United States. Would he attempted to, in 1807, to involve himself in an insurrection against the United States of America by way of the Texas thing down in Texas, okay? He was indicted for insurrection. He was a former vice president. That is an Article II in elective office. And he was charged, eventually acquitted, but he was charged with insurrection. Jefferson Davis was a United States Senator from Virginia before he was the President of the Confederacy. There were a number of United States Senators from the South who held offices in the Confederacy. An actual, real, battle-driven insurrection against the Constitution. Jefferson Davis and many of his compatriots were put on trial, admittedly by a military tribunal. They were put on trial, convicted of insurrection, and incarcerated. During the Depression, there was a priest by the name of James Cox who advocated for the poor and the homeless, and in so doing was advocating for the overthrow of the United States government. He was charged with insurrection and incarcerated. The head of the American Nazi Bund, Fritz Kuhn, was not charged with insurrection, but he was running. He basically was running for president in the context that he wanted the Nazi Party to take over the United States, and he was charged with financial violations involving the way he ran the American Bund, and he was incarcerated. Before Richard Nixon was impeached or was going to be impeached, Spiro Agnew was vice president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
While he was vice president, he was charged, an Article II elected officer, just like the president, was charged with bribery and tax fraud for things that he did while he was the governor of Maryland. He pled guilty to those charges while he was still vice president. And then as part of his plea agreement, he resigned and got a probationary sentence. That brings us to Richard Nixon, who avoided being charged with obstruction of justice and bribery and all kinds of other charges, abuse of power by trying to weaponize the IRS. Talk about weaponizing. And in that particular instance, he was saved by Gerry Ford, who I blame for where we are right now.
Wow.
By giving Richard Nixon a pardon, thinking that would heal the country. It did not heal the country. And it taught presidents and other people that they are above the law. Richard Nixon should have been charged, tried, and convicted. Didn't say put him in jail. I just said he should have been charged, tried, and convicted. Bill Clinton. Now, I don't like talking about this because I thought Bill Clinton was an outstanding president. Thank goodness that he was married to who he was married to, who helped him be an outstanding president. But he did violate the law, and he was not charged. And honestly, when he left office, he should have been.
Mm-hmm.
He lost his license because of those things. He wouldn't have gone to jail, but he should have been charged. So when we look at what's happening to Donald Trump, he is not unique. He just isn't. The only thing unique about it is the depth of his deception, the depth of his acts, which may lead us to some, and we're going to talk about later why, but may lead us to the point of calling him the greatest traitor to the United States of America, and that includes Benedict Arnold. This very well could happen, but historically, he's not unique.
Hmm.
How about that, Brendan?
Yeah.
I did my research.
Yeah, you did.
You certainly did.
Yeah, see, that's why you get to go on C-SPAN and stuff like that, right? Yeah.
No, it's my laugh. They love my laugh. Okay?
Okay, yeah. Oh, man. It's, you know, I agree. And I think what's unique, I was thinking as you were talking, you know, what's unique about the Donald Trump situation is that historically I could be wrong about this, but I don't think as a matter of degree, I doubt that I am wrong on this particular point, which is I don't think we have ever, with our eyes so wide open, knowingly elected a criminal to serve as president of the United States, because there were no secrets. There was nothing subtle about Donald Trump when he was elected president. We had the Access Hollywood tapes, right, before he was elected president. People pulled the lever for him knowing what he had said, right, that he sexually assaults women, which, is, by the way, is a crime. The whole Trump University scam was a matter of public record. When Donald Trump was elected president, those tape recordings of him claiming to be somebody named Barron, right, calling in to reporters and pretending to be somebody he wasn't to talk about himself, that kind of almost psychotic behavior was a matter of public record. His deep psychopathy and malignant narcissism was right on full display. His cruelty to people, his lack of empathy, his obsession with his own wealth, right, and his willingness to do anything to steamroll anybody who was in his way. All of this was right in front of us. And I have a friend, another friend who I talk about this all the time, and he's convinced me of something, because I want to believe that Americans voted for Donald Trump despite all that because of some other issues that they're upset about. But this friend of mine, and he's a mutual friend, Jeff knows who I'm talking about. He has convinced me. He says, you know, people didn't vote for Donald Trump despite his character and who he is. They voted for him because of it. And that's the real shame. And that's the unique, to my mind, the unique part of this is that we knowingly did this. I was reading an article this morning that said, you know, Trump being indicted for this kind of conduct, for felonies, is almost the utterly necessary and predictable outcome of all of this. You put somebody like that in the White House and give them that kind of power, and as Jeff says, historically, in an office that's treated as above the law, and what do you think is going to happen? It would have been surprising if he had not committed crimes. I really thought that when he was elected, I thought, okay, well, here are things that I'm certain about. By the time this is all over, he'll be charged with crimes and he'll be impeached. And I'm sorry to have been right about that, but I don't think there's been an easier call to make as a historical matter than that one. So anyway, now I'm rambling, but I agree with you. It's on us. It's on us as a country that we did this. We did this to ourselves, and I will forever be chagrined about that. But I agree with you.
Yeah, I think all of us really kind of saw this coming. Some of us saw that his conduct in the past, in the way that he did his business and the things that happened around him, the things that we were aware of that he and his children were doing, especially around international finance, and the changeover where banks were dropping him, and he was dealing with Deutsche Bank, which was known as a dirty bank then, is known as a dirty bank now. Knew that he had to be involved in some very, very serious stuff. And yet he was never charged with any of it, never brought to bear for it. But some of us really thought that he was a mob boss. I mean, not in the context of what we know the mob to be, that people get killed or prostitution or things like that, but that he actually was operating his business as, what's his name, is it Alan Cohen?
Roy Cohen. Yeah.
What was it? Yeah, Roy Cohen had taught him to do things. The fact that he would not do email, that he didn't put things in writing, that he only signed documents that he had to sign, told you that he never wanted anything in writing. And the way some people described the way he would have people do things for him was like, you know, in Beckett, right? Will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. which is, you know, basically the way he talks, and that's how his actions were described by certain people who read this indictment. We shouldn't be surprised. We absolutely should not be surprised. And the idea that he honestly believed that by becoming president of the United States, he had this suit of armor on, this Teflon suit of armor that you would put on a tank to prevent it from getting, you know, blown up by a shell, okay, was what he had. No one would ever, ever, ever touch him for anything he ever did, before and in the future. It doesn't matter. And that's the way he thinks about it. They'll never touch me. They never have. They'll never convict me. I'm John Gotti. Okay, I'll smile when I walk into the courthouse. And I'll wear a nice suit, and I'll be Dapper Don, literally. I can't see why anybody is surprised by all of this. And to defend it, to literally defend it, nobody is saying what he did. It will say that he didn't do the things he's alleged to have done. I have not heard anybody say he didn't do that other than him. He doesn't even deny he did what they said he did. I mean, he really doesn't. He says right. The Presidential Records Act gives him immunity from all of this. No, it doesn't. And we'll talk about the Presidential Records Act. We've talked about it before. We'll talk about it again and what it really says. He just honestly believes that he is immune and that there is literally nothing anybody can do about it. So stop complaining. That's his attitude. This really kind of has to come to an end. And he has to be taught, and the public has to learn that it is important that these things take place. And truthfully, it's important that he be convicted. This is the most important case in the history of this country. The most important case in the history of this country. It will define whether we continue to exist as a democracy or not. That's how important it is. So that brings me to the next subject matter that needs to be talked about, the fact that this is the most important case. And that simply is, let's talk about the judge.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about her before, right? I want to read something that was written by three judges, two of whom were Trump appointees, just like this judge. And it was written in prior litigation involving this case, but just the search warrant itself. They describe all of the arguments. Now, remember, let me give you the status. This is an appeal from an order from this judge giving Donald everything he wanted, and made up her own argument that he did not even raise to justify this. And this is a court that reversed her, took her opinion and went down each and every point of her opinion and said, wrong, 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 and explained why. And one of the things they said at the close of one of those was, all these arguments are a sideshow. The real question that guides our analysis is this. Adequate remedy for what? Meaning, what are you complaining about? What do you need an adequate remedy from? And at the end of the opinion, this is the next to last paragraph. The law is clear, and they're addressing themselves directly to the judge. The law is clear. We cannot write a rule that allows any subject of a search warrant to block government investigations after the execution of the warrant. Nor can we write a rule that allows only former presidents to do so. Either approach would be a radical reordering of our case law, limiting the federal court's involvement in criminal investigations. Radical reordering of our case law. Both would violate bedrock separation of powers limitations. Accordingly, we agree with the government that the district court, that judge, the district court, improperly exercised equitable jurisdiction and that dismissal of the entire proceeding is required. if you are a lawyer, you can understand that this was a total and complete evisceration of a judge who they basically says doesn't know how to follow the law, makes up her own law, and tries to change it to suit what she thinks her obligations are to the guy who put her on the bench. It doesn't take a lot to interpret that. Aileen Cannon is not a particularly good lawyer. And I'm not even going to hesitate to say that she is a product of affirmative action. She got into the law school she got into. She got into a very, very exclusive high school in Miami after her parents moved from Columbia here, but they were Cuban. They were Cubans that ran to Columbia after the revolution, and then moved to the United States from Columbia. That in and of itself means nothing, except for she has an attitude, and it pervades through the things that she does, that somehow or another she's smarter and knows better than 240 years of history and all of the judges before her, that she has the right and somehow believes she has the power to make stuff up, and that she has the duty to protect her patron, the person who put her on the bench, and the country be damned. That's her attitude. She's been on the bench of all of 2.5 years, and somehow she thinks she's qualified, even though she's a federal judge, she's qualified to hear the most important case in the history of the United States. She is ill-prepared. She has a bad demeanor. And she's certainly in handling something like this. This is a national security case that really supersedes all national security cases. And she's never handled a national security case. There are numerous judges in the SDFL, that's the Southern District of Florida, who have done national security cases. She has an absolutely horrendous reputation after what she did after the search warrant at Mar-a-Lago. She is derided by her fellow judges. She is derided by state court judges. She is derided by lawyers all over this country. Question her objectivity. And yet she has not learned the simple lesson for a judge. You do not want your picture in the newspaper. You do not want newspapers talking about the things that you write and the things that you do. I don't care if you've got a lifetime appointment and you think that you are God's gift. She just doesn't get it. And this is a woman who made a living as a so-called, journalist, writing stories about tomatoes and yoga. I mean, Marco Rubio, I mean, what do you expect him to say? He says she's a highly qualified individual. She's not a highly qualified individual. The ABA said so. But nobody listens to the ABA anymore. This is a woman who has no business hearing this case. And there's a quote from a lawyer who used to be a federal prosecutor, who was the prosecutor in a case that I tried many, many years ago. He was the prosecutor. I was one of the defense attorneys. At that time, it was the largest bank fraud in the history of the United States at $32 million, which is chump change now. And we were in trial for like 6 months. His name is Mark Schnapp. and he's a friend. And he writes the following. The key point is that Judge Cannon had no jurisdiction to do anything here, meaning in that case. She tried to assert equitable jurisdiction to appoint the special master, but her own opinion showed why her analysis was defective. Her opinion got ripped to shreds by the 11th Circuit. I think that makes it pretty persuasive. Okay? She has absolutely no business, first of all, being a federal judge, other than she belongs to the federal society. But she's not qualified to hear this case. She just isn't. And I'm not surprised she's not going to show up in Miami, because she isn't going to drive down to Miami for an arraignment. And she's going to try to move this case to Fort Pierce. But the government's going to object. This is a Miami case. Judge, you want to stay in this case? You're just going to have to move to Miami for the purposes of trying this case. Just like Judge Payne did many years ago and sat on the bench for 6 months in Miami when he lived in North Palm Beach. That's all. She cannot on her own just move it up to Fort Pierce over the objection of the government. She will see there's not a continuance that Donald Trump wants. There is not a request that he will make that she will say no to. All intended. She'll set a trial date for next June or July. This is a district with what's known as the lightning docket. Not a rocket docket, a lightning docket. That any other judge in this district would have this case over with by the end of the year. But she'll find reasons to extend it for him.
Mm-hmm.
I promise. That's what she will do. And everybody knows it. Everybody knows it's coming, and she doesn't care what anybody thinks. Don't attack me. That's because you fear me. I do fear you, but not for the reasons you think. Not because you're powerful, but because you're weak. I mean, this is really awful stuff. Time to chime in, Brendan. Are you there? Brendan, am I there? Holy moly, am I there? Yeah, I'm still on. Hezzy, you there? Hello?
We're on air. We will.
Hezzy, we've been disconnected, Hezzy.
No, we're definitely on all the time. Something went wrong, and I don't know what it was. I was trying to get back to the studio, but I heard everything you said. I got one question.
Okay.
What is it that
Well,
hold
on,
right?
hold on.
So many people.
We
got to
get Brendan back on.
Okay,
hold on one second while I send him a text.
Okay, we should all be on.
Okay.
There we go. Now I'm only on this. Okay. All right. So, Brendan, how long were you off? Where did I leave? Where was I when you dropped? He's not there.
Oh, we just lost Brendan, it seems, but I guess he'll be calling back.
Yeah, I'm sending him a text right now. Call in now.
Okay.
Something's gone wrong. And now we're on, we're talking about all of this live on the show.
Yeah. Well, until he calls in, what is
sure,
it that mesmerized? Okay.
What is it mesmerized
you,
what?
You know,
I can
what
hear
is
you.
It that mesmerized, what is it that mesmerized everybody, including media, to take sides in this and forget about the law? Is it all money?
Well,
was it?
No, I don't know that the media, I can't say the media ignored the law. They do talk
Brendan's
about
back.
It. Yeah.
Brendan's
the,
back.
The, yeah, the conservative right-wing media and many of the congressmen are ignoring the law. They don't deny that Trump did what the indictment says he did.
Mm-hmm.
What they are trying to do is try to conflate, for example, Hillary Clinton, who underwent years of investigation,
yeah.
Even during times that Republicans had control of Congress and control of the DOJ and chose not to charge her. Trump goes out and says, well, I don't want her to be charged. Well, that's because he was told there was nothing to charge her with.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to sound like that was his decision. It wasn't. It was DOJ's decision not to prosecute her. And even after he became president, his DOJ still continued to investigate and realized there were no charges to bring. They try to conflate it with Biden and with Pence, but the indictment here in this case is based upon the cover-up. It's based upon the law of obstruction, and conservative radio, television, and conservative congressmen are jumping on the Presidential Records Act, which we're going to talk about, which does not say what they say it says and what Donald says it says, and try to conflate it with the conduct of Biden and Pence. And the three cases, including Hillary Clinton, are nowhere near that because there was utter and complete cooperation in all of those cases. In Hillary's case, there were no documents. There were just emails that she got that had classified information that she forwarded to other people. And so she mishandled it because it was on her private server. But she did not show it to people, and she didn't try to hold on to it, and she understood that they were classified. She never read any classified emails outside of a SCIF. So they're just not the same. But they want to say it's the same. He's not charged with taking the documents. He's charged with keeping them when they were supposed to come back.
Yeah.
We'll go through the indictment. Are you there, Brendan, finally?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Jump in.
Yeah. I'm going to do one of my probably tired spiels at this point, but it's just worth repeating. As a country, we have to get back to the point where we can, what I'll call, pass the Sesame Street test. And just to remind people, for anybody, you know, I certainly would remember this, but when I was, a little 3- and 4-year-old, I still remember I was very proud of myself when Sesame Street would come on and play this little song called "Which One of These Things Is Not Like the Others?" And they'd show you four objects, right? A glove, a shoe, a scarf, and a hamburger. And they'd say, which one of these things is not like the others? And of course, being the little genius I was, I said, well, the hamburger is not like the others, right? This is called reasoning by analogy and being able to compare things that are alike and distinguish things that are not alike. And there are really grave logical fallacies. Really, a logical fallacy is basically a sin of thinking, right? A sinful way of thinking.
Yeah.
And it's number one is whataboutism, right? Instead of talking about the case in front of you, point to something else. What about Hunter's laptop? What about Hillary? Benghazi,
Hunter
Benghazi,
Biden's
Benghazi.
Laptop.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You know? So, yeah, first point to something else, right? So it'll start a shiny object, and then suggest a false equivalence, right? This is just like that.
Right.
No, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
That's a shoe, and this is a hamburger. Okay, they're not alike. The breadth and depth of the deception in this case, it's almost chilling. I almost don't want to know what documents he had and how compromised they were. It is just absolutely chilling. The fact that the indictment says that among the documents were national secrets about our own vulnerabilities, our military's vulnerabilities. In other words, how an enemy could defeat us, or at least exact a terrible cost on us. That's the kind of stuff this guy had with him, right? In bathrooms and showers, stored on a stage. And that he refused to give back. You were talking about Hillary Clinton. I still remember the big deal in the Hillary case was that the emails, some of the paragraphs in some of the emails that she had a small C. Remember this? A small letter C, not on top, but in the margin next to a paragraph that contained classified information. And she apparently missed that and mishandled documents that had that marking. Not documents that had big yellow and red top secret eyes only across the entire document. I mean, these things that we're not even in the same universe as what Biden accidentally having some classified records among his vice presidential papers, which he himself said he had because they searched and they were found and he turned them over and he cooperated. No big deal. He didn't want to keep them. He didn't even know he had them. That's a different. And same for Mike Pence. Again, there's mishandling and then there's stealing, and as you say, not just taking but retaining. So there's my weekly lecture on can we please get to the point where we can pass Sesame Street Republicans? It's an absolute ridiculous false equivalence.
The conflation is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I will say this. Before we go any further, let's make sure that we cover, and I want to talk about the Presidential Records Act in a minute, but let's talk about what's going to happen today. I'm not sure beyond the moment he walks into the courtroom. And the reason why I say that is that he has been trying to hire a lawyer with national security credentials. That is a security clearance and the ability and the knowledge to defend these type of cases. They are all saying no. And they don't want anything to do with him. And it's down to one lawyer that I know that I don't want to talk about because I'm hoping he's going to say no, that it's been rumored. And I don't want to talk about him right now, other than to say this particular lawyer is one of the most fastidious lawyers I know. He truly is a lawyer's lawyer. But other than him, they're all saying no. Now, there are people who are making phone calls trying to get the gig, and they're all mid-range criminal defense lawyers who wouldn't have a prayer standing up to Jack Smith and his team, who don't have national security credentials. One or two of them have handled national cases that got national notoriety, but that was a while ago. And some of them will take on any case, whether they're qualified for it or not, as long as there's a dollar in it for them. And I don't think those are the kind of lawyers that a former president of the United States who is charged basically with espionage, that's the statute. Everybody says he didn't commit espionage. That's true. Retention, improper handling, and or showing classified documents to be unauthorized people documents is espionage. It doesn't mean that you're a spy, although, you know, the shoe fits. So let's talk about what's going to happen. He's going to walk in the courtroom. The question is he going to agree to be arraigned? Is he going to move for a continuance because his true trial lawyer is not there? And he wants his true trial lawyer there from the start of the process. If that motion is granted, that's because Aileen Cannon thought of this, as I have, and has told Magistrate Goodman to give him his continuance. The proper method in any other district judge would say, you have counsel with you, Mr. Trump. You can enter a plea, and then we can move forward with who your counsel is going to be. Now, if that is done, then he will speak the two words that he will say, other than yes, Your Honor, somewhere later in the process. Not guilty. And then the question will be, is there any scheduling beyond you all will have to appear in front of Judge Cannon in Fort Pierce, which the government will object to and say this is a Miami case. If she's staying on the case, she's going to have to come to Miami to try it. We will not agree to a change up to Fort Pierce for her convenience. That would be terribly inconvenient for everybody, including the defendant who lives an hour and a quarter away, and we have to drive 3 hours to get up there, 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. So, no. So they'll wrangle over that. Those are the kind of things that are going to happen. There will be a report re attorney. In other words, Mr. Trump, you have a certain number of days to obtain a counsel, and then we're going to have to talk to you about what we're going to do about getting you represented. Wouldn't it be something if they stuck him with the public defender's office, who are some of the best lawyers around, by the way, and he had to reimburse the public defender's office for and get off cheap at like $150 an hour? But something will have to happen in that context, and then it will be over. This hearing could last 3 minutes. It could last 15 minutes. It could last an hour. I just don't know. And I don't think anybody can tell you that they do. And that's really the status of the case at this point. There's nothing else that can be done until he is arraigned. I think the key question that needs to be answered, maybe you've got a theory on this, Brendan. Why? I want to know why. Don't you want to know why, Brendan?
I do. To a lot of different whys. Yeah, go ahead.
But overall, don't you want to know why he did such a stupid thing other than he thought he could get away with it? But still, what was he going to do with those documents? I want to know what he was going to do with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to know. I want the inquirer to get involved in this because reasonable, you know, inquiring minds need to know. I don't want to speculate why. The first why is he's just a petulant child. Mine, these are mine. This is my toy. You can't play with my toy. That's one thought. Probably a pretty accurate one. But who holds on to top secret, eyes only classified information? Who does that?
Yeah.
When he knows he's not supposed to have it and he knows it hasn't been declassified, we got him on tape. Dang, I can't declassify anything. I could when I was president, but I can't now. After he's told everybody in the world that once I put it in a box and took it from Washington, it was all declassified. Why? Who's seen this stuff? Who has he talked to about this stuff? You know, why do the Saudis sink money into a golf organization?
Of course.
And buy their way into the PGA so that Donald Trump can hold numerous multi-million dollar tournaments on his golf courses. I wonder why they did that. Why would the Saudis do something like that? You got any ideas, Prem?
I'd like to know.
I don't understand why. Why would they do such things? Why would he hold a battle plan to punish Iran? Who would be interested in that? Can you think of anybody, Brad? Who would be interested in that?
Right.
The Saudis? Yeah. The Russians? Absolutely. Would the Russians like to know what our vulnerabilities are? You betcha.
China.
I just can't answer these questions. I want an answer. I'd like to be the guy that if Trump decided to plead, I'd like to be the guy on the bench to look down and say, now that you've allocated and you've taken care of everything, Mr. Trump, why? Tell me why. You know, like the old song kid goes, tell me why, is the world really round? That's an old song when I was a kid. I don't know. Third base.
Third base.
I don't know what we do about it.
No, you ask the big questions, and one of the things people need to understand about today, you get the sense that there's a little bit of a, you know, media, and it's understandable, a media kind of a little bit of a frenzy over this. But the fact is that what happens today is, you know, those big mega questions that you're asking, we'll get nowhere near the answers today. Today is a minor blip in what's to come. Much more important than the arraignment of Donald Trump in this case is what's still going on in the District of Columbia in front of a grand jury. Right. I mean, talk about wanting to know why. And also what's continuing in Georgia. I mean, there's a lot still to come. And it all probably fits together. Right.
It does.
You know, yeah, yeah.
What the common thread is? What's the common thread, Brendan? What's the common thread?
I want to hear your theory. Right.
Donald Trump is the common thread on all of it. He is the enterprise. And what does that mean?
RICO.
Yes. He is the enterprise. What he wants and what he does is the enterprise. And everything else that surrounds him is there to feed his enterprise, which is the furtherance of his wealth and the furtherance of his power. Just like a mob boss. Not one of these investigations, not any of these indictments, revolve around anything other than Donald J. Trump. Something has to happen. I mean, all these investigations have got to wait on him. Maybe he thinks he can live longer than the investigations and the prosecutions can, and he'll just die unconvicted. I don't know. Third base. I just don't know. And I just more and more get the inkling that what is going to come out of Washington is going to be that RICO count. And one of the RICO conspiracies within that RICO count, one of those conspiracies is going to be seditious conspiracy. And then everything else that happened, and everything else he did, and everything everybody else did at his behest without him specifically saying it. Mm-hmm. It's like right now, he was on the radio last night, by the way, on Cuban radio, riling up the Cuban-American community to come to his defense. Mm-hmm. Because nobody's coming in from out of town to create a riot right now. He knows that. He needs local people to come out and cause a riot. So he went on Cuban radio last night. He doesn't speak Spanish, by the way. Duh.
He barely speak English.
That's true, too. I mean, when you have a vocabulary of 100 words, what more do you need to know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Bad. Nice. Yeah, not nice. Right.
Yeah. Really. The only the only three words anybody has to know is long live Trump. That's everybody else, that's the only thing they need to know. You know, you just walk into a McDonald's and say, I'll take one long live Trump. wouldn't that be something? But that's what I see coming. I could be wrong. I thought they had him on a RICO when he first took office.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a RICO there to charge him with. There were enough overt acts to charge a RICO. But now they got it, and I think that's where Jack's going. And I think somewhere down the line, Donald's going to be given the choice. Do you want to face a life sentence in a RICO where you are not going to get a bond no matter what else happens? RICO defendants don't get bond. So you want to face the RICO, or do you want to take a long probationary period with a gag in your mouth for the next 10 years? Your choice. They called their bluff just before the indictment dropped. Don't call Jack's bluff again, because he's not a poker player. He's betting, he's holding them. So, I don't know. I really don't. You want to talk about the Presidential Records Act?
Yeah, but first thing people need to know about it, because you're right, Republicans keep pointing to that every time they're asked about the charges. He wasn't charged with violating the Presidential Records Act.
He's
charged with espionage and
defense.
Conspiracy. Right, right.
Thinks that's his defense.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I did everything under the Presidential Records Act. Well, no. Yeah, no. Okay. First of all, the history of the Presidential Records Act is that after the government paid, I now hear, $16 million for
mm-hmm.
Richard Nixon's documents. They passed the Presidential Records Act and said the documents created that are not personal in nature, like writing your kid a letter or something like that, belong to the United States government, belong to the people of the United States. And procedures were set forth where they come in when a new administration starts and teaches people how to maintain records, where they have to go, how they're to be indexed, and how they're to be filed away.
Mm.
So that when they leave office, they come in and they empty all the file cabinets, and they put them into boxes. And when the new administration comes in, there's like nothing there. The place is empty.
Mm-hmm.
And they're then picked up by the National Archives and taken to the National Archives, where the archivist now looks through and makes sure they're indexed properly and puts them in order. And then they are moved to wherever the former president is in a secure facility that is rented by and controlled by the National Archives. Nobody gets in. Nobody goes out without it knowing. And people watch on camera and personally while documents are being reviewed. And if the former president wants some classified documents. They are brought to him. He's allowed to read them, and then they're taken right back again. He does not put them in his drawer. He doesn't secure them where he's at. He literally has to read them while somebody's standing there waiting. If he needs to refresh his recollection for writing a book like Obama did. So when he packed those boxes, and he did pack them himself, many of those boxes were packed by him. Many of those documents were put into boxes by him. And he put it on a General Services Administration truck and had them sent down to Florida. He violated the Presidential Records Act. Any rights he had under the Presidential Records Act were gone because he had already violated it, which is a crime, by the way. They went down there, and here's where the trouble starts. The president, the National Archives knew he had the records, knew that he had classified information, knew that those things belonged to them, and they kept asking for it and asking for it and asking for it, and he kept going, my toy. And eventually, the archives, after getting 15 boxes out of God knows 100, maybe 120, went to the FBI, and the FBI got involved, and the rest of it is history. This case is not about the Presidential Records Act because it never applied because the presidential records were improperly removed from the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, he has no rights under the PRA. But it is about the fact that he unlawfully retained them, that he kept them. And he knew when he kept them he wasn't entitled to them. And then he showed them to people. And then he disobeyed a subpoena, obstruction of justice. He hid them when they were executing a search warrant, obstruction of justice. He gave false certifications were done on his behalf. He made false statements to people publicly, obstruction of justice. That's what this case is about a man who believes that the law – Richard Nixon said it once in an interview with Robert – what's his name, Frost. I forgot his first name from England. And he was asked
Robert
about
Frost.
Certain things that were done. What was his name?
Robert Frost, I think.
No, Robert Frost was a poet. Wrong Frost. Okay, I almost said Robert Frost. It wasn't Robert Frost. But the key here is that the question was asked of Nixon, and he said, what I'm telling you is when the president does it, it's not illegal. Good impersonation of Nixon, don't you think?
That's pretty good, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought so. But that's the way he thinks. He thinks like Nixon did. Not at the end of his life he didn't, but did. He believes if he does it, it's not against the law because I was the president. But he even on tape admits that he doesn't have the powers of the presidency because he wasn't president anymore. So that's why the Presidential Records Act is not, I repeat, is not a defense in this case. They'll try to make it a defense, but it is not a defense in this case. And Jack Smith is going to file a motion in limine that says they cannot present the Presidential Records Act as a defense. Unless they have proof that he complied with the Presidential Records Act from the get-go, it is not a defense to this case. So I wanted to talk about that because I'm so tired of people. Presidential Records Act, this and that. You know, like it's what's it, legal toilet paper. I can clean myself with it. And it's just, you know, you like that one, didn't you? I used that before.
Oh,
jeez. And Marilyn's sitting there saying, Jeff, I hate scatological humor. Okay.
Right.
Anything that relates to scatological humor.
Yeah,
be,
right.
Okay? Boy, am I gonna, I'm going to really get it for that one.
Yeah, you are.
I really am. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the way it goes. Let's see, what else did I list in? Oh, yeah, there was we got time, so what the hell, we'll use it.
Yes, we do.
So let's talk about the indictment itself. You go ahead. You start it. Okay? Let's talk about the indictment itself.
Yeah. One of the things that's interesting about the indictment, there are 37 counts, I believe.
Yes, 37 counts.
31 of those, yeah, 31 of those are individual documents that are
right.
know, obviously not displayed, but are very briefly described. And then after those documents, there's the counts about obstruction and conspiracy. To my mind, one of the most interesting things about this whole affair is that there are, and you hear commentators talking about this. The only documents that are going to be used in this case are going to be documents that can be used. Obviously, the government's going to have to be very careful and sensitive about how they use these documents because they're highly classified. But as intelligence lawyers who have intelligence, national security and intelligence experience will tell you, what's really scary about this is what documents we don't know about that Jack Smith has that are so sensitive that they can't be used as part of this case. There are almost by definition, we know that that's true because the number of classified documents that were recovered does not match the number that were charged. That's very likely because some of them simply cannot be under any circumstances be used in a judicial proceeding. They're just too sensitive.
That's how spies save their lives. They sit there and say that if you charge me with all of that, I have the right to present all of the documents.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so they bargain and take life sentences instead of the death penalty by bargaining that away. So people need to know that it's a bargaining chip.
Right. And so it is crucial to keep in mind that the charges that are contained in the indictment are probably not even the most serious that actually occurred. But it's again, when you read through and it's very early in the indictment where the government describes the nature, and that's why Jack Smith said people should read this. It describes the nature of the materials that he unlawfully retained, and as we've already discussed, that includes the vulnerabilities of the United States military, includes nuclear weapons information, includes information about our allies, and it's just unbelievable. It's interesting that last night senators apparently started arriving back in Washington from their home states, and reporters managed to ask a lot of them, even the Republicans, reporters managed to ask a lot of them what they think about all this. Those who could be reached and actually answered the question. I thought it was interesting that by last night, I didn't hear quite as much excuse making as we did before the indictment came out.
That's true.
Yeah. It seems like some of them have actually read it and said, oh my God. I mean, if this is the kind of stuff that's going to come out in trial, we have a real problem if we said that this was not serious. Because it's as serious as you can get.
It amazes me that Marco Rubio, who is what, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, who was making excuses for Donald Trump and still is.
Yeah. Right.
Saying that he shouldn't be charged. Now, they've listed 31 documents, and they give brief descriptions about what they're about when they can. I think they did in all of these. They gave a brief description of what they're about, the dates, that type of thing. The key here is that before they were put into the indictment, they had to be cleared with the security agencies.
Right.
The CIA is involved reviewing the indictment. The NSA is involved. the DIA is involved. There's a list of about 12 or 14 agencies that are involved with intelligence that review this indictment and say, no, you can't use that document. No, you can't reference that document. Yes, you can use that document if it's done properly. And there is a procedure for the use of these documents in court.
Right.
You're entitled to a public trial, not necessarily disclosure of the contents of these documents. And the bottom line is that some of this stuff is just devastating, absolutely and completely devastating to our national security. And I come back, what's the question I asked?
Yeah, why?
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why do you need this stuff? Does it make you feel powerful? Because you have it? Because you know this stuff that makes you powerful? Your finger is not on the button anymore. It doesn't help you. And if you need this to show off, you are more of a narcissist than anybody could possibly have imagined. You are a type 2, axis B psychopath. By the way, that's a personality disorder that is
mm-hmm.
incurable.
Right.
You can't take a pill for it. Got a couple of members of my family who suffer from that.
Yep, so do I. I think most of us.
Okay. So I think that the indictment itself is important because it and there have been lawyers, even Bill Barr says this is devastating.
Yeah, right.
You know, there's a couple of defenses to some of it, but he's as he put it, he's toast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, Bill Barr should know, even though he's probably the worst, other than John Mitchell, he's like the worst attorney general we've ever had. But God bless him that he thinks that Donald Trump is guilty. And he probably knows better than anybody what Donald Trump is guilty of.
Yeah.
But this is, you have to understand, this is all of these counts are about willful retention. Counts 1 through 31 are willful retention. That means he knew that they should be returned, not that he took them. No one's charging him with taking them. They're charging him with keeping them down in Mar-a-Lago when the National Archives wanted him back and the FBI wanted him back. He willfully retained material he was not entitled to have, and he knew he wasn't entitled to have it. How many people had to tell him, you got to give it back? Because Stephen Miller says don't? The only Jewish skinhead in the entire United States tells him don't give it back? And the rest of them are about the obstruction, hiding things from a search warrant, hiding things from your own lawyers, if nothing else, moving things around so they can't find them, lying to the FBI, lying to the National Archives. That's the essence of the charges. And in essence, that really is the essence of espionage. Tie the willful retention to the other charges, and you now have the acts which show your knowledge that you were unlawfully retaining things because you hid them from people. So this indictment is a great story. I would highly recommend it. It's about a 15-minute read. Even though it is 49 pages, the indictment itself is actually only 45. the rest of it is the what we call the penalty sheet,
mm-hmm.
starting on page 46, and the possible in terms of imprisonment. I mean, when you add up, you know, 30-some counts of $250,000 a count, that's going to use up all of his cash. I mean, this is really something special. And it is devastating. And he really can't afford to go to trial on this. If he's betting on getting reelected and pardoning himself, he's in for a rude awakening. I have no idea what makes him think that he'll get his 30 or 32% from his base, and everybody else is going to say, no, I don't want you as my president. I don't want a guy who gives away secrets or hides secrets from the people who are supposed to keep them and maybe gives the information to people that shouldn't have it. No, I don't want you as my president. Go play golf. So,
there's
the last
10 minutes
question
left.
Was asked, okay. Some people have asked, can Donald Trump really be put in prison? What's the answer to that question, Brendan?
Yeah, and I'd hate to be on the Secret Service detail. Now you got to go to jail, too.
The truth of the matter is there are two ways he can go to prison. They can send him to Supermax in Colorado and protect him that way. Well, we know what Ted Kaczynski did about that. Ted Kaczynski just killed himself. But the other way is to put him at a work camp like in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, where there are no walls, no barbed wire. You live in a dormitory-style place. These are all white-collar criminal people. There's no bad guys being stepped down from maximum security like there are at some prison farms. And his Secret Service people can do eight-hour shifts and then go home.
Mm-hmm.
They just have to move to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
And they can do it. He can do his time, just like anybody else. And all of his telephone calls will be monitored, and all of his mail will be monitored. He doesn't write letters, so he ain't going to send anything out. But, yeah, they can put him in prison. And instead of playing on the golf course there, he'll be working on the golf course there. He'll be raking the traps and maybe cutting the grass. Okay? At least he'll be on a golf course, right? But, yeah, he can go to prison. The answer is an absolute yes.
Mm-hmm.
And if his lawyers, doing him any justice at all, they're telling him, you're sitting there saying you can't be put in prison. You can be. Don't ever think you can't be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So I strongly urge that you consider some. He always says, I never settle my cases. The only trial he actually went to trial on was the E. Jean Carroll trial because he wouldn't offer enough money to get out from underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
He learned his lesson. I'm going to do what I used to do. I'm going to settle my cases. Even though I say I don't settle cases, I'm going to settle them. And he should be looking really hard at getting out from under this. By the way, the last story was that his daughter doesn't talk to him anymore. She's hiding. That all of this has made her friends not want to be around her. And when she goes to events, no one wants their picture taken with her. That really upsets her. Yeah, really upset that no one wants to have their picture taken with her. And she wants nothing to do with him. He's broke. I'd worry about that $2 billion your husband got, though.
Yep.
From who? The Saudis. Why do they keep popping up everywhere? I don't know. Third base, you got it. Third base. Okay. We went over. We lost about 10 minutes in the middle. Today is going to be an interesting day. A long day, but an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be ensconced in front of your TV, aren't you?
Yeah, waiting for phone calls.
Could you tell us again when you're going to be on?
I'm going to be on C-SPAN tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. It'll run till 8:45.
Okay.
There is an initial interview between myself and the moderator who does the show that is the beginning of it. And then I am to answer phone calls.
Nice.
They come in from far-right people who think that I'm a commie. But other than that...
Yeah,
far-right people actually do watch C-SPAN. They're just people who just love to call and rattle people. But, yeah, I'll be taking questions for about 30 to 35 minutes.
Hey, maybe our buddy will call you. Maybe our buddy will call you and tell you where to put a baseball.
I thought it was the bat, but okay, either case,
yeah.
It's about the same width.
my favorite call of all time on the
I'm sure it was.
Hezzy there.
Yeah. Hezzy was sitting there going, what?
Yeah.
Hezzy, hang up. Okay. Disconnect. This call is over. Okay. You were enjoying it so much that you didn't want to hang up. So yeah, tomorrow morning from 8 to 8:45, and if you're in the Miami area, my voice and picture will be heard and seen starting at 1:30 this afternoon on WSBN Channel 7, the news station in Miami.
You're not going to be able to leave your house anymore without people, you know, swarming you for autographs and
yeah.
And
I don't think it's autographs they're going to be looking for. Shush. Somehow I think I'm probably going to have to buy a Kevlar suit. but it will be very interesting to see what kind of questions I get. I've never been nervous going on television before, but this one's got me a little rattled.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm a little concerned about this one. Okay.
Yeah.
So keep Maryland close by.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to keep Marilyn as far away as I can because I don't want her to get hit accidentally. Okay?
Right.
I'm going to protect her. Okay, honey, you should keep your distance from me for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens. But that's my schedule, and you've got a schedule to do some stuff this afternoon too, right?
Yeah, I'm just waiting on our mutual friends to let me know. So.
Okay. All right. Well, have fun with it.
Yeah.
As Hezzy likes to say, it doesn't get any better than that.
It doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys are the best.
No, thank you. Hezzy, you sound better. I'm glad that you sound better. I'm glad you're feeling better. And we will see
you
next week. Yeah. Well, not thanks to me, but you're taking care of yourself, and I'm glad of that. So keep taking care of yourself. You're important to the world, okay?
Thank you so much.
Ditto.
All right.
Be well, guys.
Take care
of
yourself.
Best.
Okay.
Brandon, I'll talk
have a great
to you
week.
Too. Okay.
Sounds good.
I'll talk
thank
to you,
folks.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye. We have about 90 seconds left, so just want to wish everybody a good day. Thanks to Jeffrey Schwartz and Brendan Beery, both from Cooley Law School, based in Tampa, Florida. And I hope everybody tunes in to listen to Mr. Beery and Jeffrey Schwartz. It should be all fascinating. I'll certainly be tuning in. Anyway, all the best. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Take care and goodbye.